we stand today.
This is Method
with
Method.
A Shadow.
The Business Method.
The Business Method Podcast.
The Business Method Podcast featuring Chris Reynolds. Entrepreneurs, systems, methods, tools, and tactics for location independence.
Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, I'm your host, Chris Reynolds, and welcome to the Business Method Podcast, a podcast featuring successful entrepreneurs and high-profile people dissecting their online and location-independent business models. We dissect the different methods, tools, and tactics of high-performance online entrepreneurs and high-caliber people in a series format. On our first series, we interviewed 100 entrepreneurs in 100 days that had built businesses creating $100,000 or more annually. On our second series, we are interviewing 100 entrepreneurs that have built location-independent businesses that generate $1 million or more in annual revenue. There's a growing movement of people building these caliber of businesses, and we are getting behind the minds, the logic, and the science of what it takes to build businesses like this. On top of that, we also gather entrepreneurs at events and retreats around the world. This October, we are having our annual event in Thailand, Get Shit Done Live. It's 10 days of high-performance productivity, targeted collaboration, and rapid execution designed for entrepreneurs to get a lot of work done in a little amount of time. Some say it's like 10 months of work in 10 days. There's a magic that happens when brilliant minds come together to push one another towards productive execution. That is exactly what this retreat is about. Check out all the details at thebusinessmethod.com. That is thebusinessmethod.com. Now, let's jump into today's show.
The Business Method.
Hey, listeners, welcome back to the show. This is the second part of John McGarvey's original interview, and we're going to dive in more into the depths of building an international business with 10,000 distributing points, Chinese medicine, and the importance of productivity and goal setting in your life. If you haven't checked out the first part of the interview, be sure you do that first, and then come back and check out this one. If you're coming back, welcome, and let's dive back into the show.
Entrepreneurs, systems, methods, tools, and tactics.
I'm kind of curious on your take of the food industry in the U.S. today, because you know you're into Chinese herbal medicine, and then you were doing, or you ended up in health, natural foods, frozen foods, and you know, I think a lot of people that they just have this image of all these factories just shipping out a bunch of crappy food to us, and we're all getting obese and unhealthy, and especially foreigners, they really think the food in America is just poisoned from my experience, you know, and they think, well, we don't want to eat any, go there and eat, you know, and people have this mentality. You know, I've had friends that travel to the U.S. and either they get sick, and maybe it's just their mindset or some placebo effect, or really, you know, the effects of chemicals and GMOs and what we put on our food. So from your experience being in a big industry like that, and also obviously you're focused on natural, you know, some organic health at the same time. What's your take on the food industry and where it's going? Kind of give us an insider view of being there and how you feel about the industry today.
Well, I think that view that you hear from people that have traveled here is somebody who that may have been true 25 years ago, but that is not true anymore. I mean, there are wonderful brands out there that are totally rocking it when it relates to both entrepreneurialism and, like, you know, doing twists and disrupting certain categories. And then as well, just on the local level, you can go into any sort of town, city in the United States and find a co-op that's carrying local stuff, you know. Mm-hmm. And I think if we've done nothing else over the last 10 years is we've raised the stature of the importance, or at least the dialogue, we should say, around GMOs and organics and whatnot. And you see big retailers that are having a huge, huge push into driving organic produce, as an example, or setting up criteria as it relates to GMOs and foods, and what's your policy. And so I think, if nothing else, this food industry was very, very slow to adapt, but it's the Wild West now of entrepreneurialism in terms of people doing both innovative things with ingredients and flavors. But then as well, you look at brands like Beyond Meat, where they're trying to revolutionize, so to speak, the meat industry, you know. And we dabbled very heavily, I should say, with my frozen food company in the meatless category. And we were very, I don't want to say early, because you've got brands like Garden Burger and whatnot that were doing meatless stuff then, but we were the kind of first say, all right, let's get out of just being soy. And so we made vegetarian burgers and meatballs and things of that nature. You fast forward today, and there are some just kick-ass sort of non-meat alternatives, plant-based, which is a category that is growing leaps and bounds right now, driven by brands like Beyond Meat and then also almond milk and things of that nature. And so I think the state of the industry is fantastic, and how it's embraced by the government in terms of regulations and whatnot, that's a totally different story. But if you're coming here and looking to eat, you know, a clean palate at a value that I think wouldn't have been around 15 years ago, you can totally do it. I mean, retailers have embraced that sort of need to have clean options available. And so I think it's a really exciting time. And I think part of the story with Dow Labs at the current time is, you know, when we look at our distribution model, is starting to bypass traditional retail and traditional retail distribution to go directly to the customer. And so I think as it relates to ability for food startups in particular to be successful, I think it's very, very promising, given that it's just easier to kind of get stuff directly to people that are looking for it, regardless of where they are.
That's a good point. John, I'm curious about how long were you with, how long did you have the frozen food business?
Hey, longer than I wanted. I was with it for about 7 years all in.
Okay.
And during that period, that's when we did the Dominican Republic thing, and I was kind of really got into the entrepreneurial bug and side of my career.
Now, taking it from kind of almost at a 0 point to 10,000 retail and club distribution distributors, mm-hmm. What kind of what mentality and thought process did you have to make that work? So, like, what I'm experiencing with a lot these days, John, is like surrounding myself with entrepreneurs that are on a completely different level than me, like 7, 8, 9, 10 steps up. And yeah. When I do that, like, I find that almost instantaneously my thought process and my thoughts go to a complete different level. So
totally.
I'm kind of curious, like, if we can get some tidbits from you, because that's an incredible feat, taking it to 10,000 points of 10,000 distributors. The thought process and the mentality that worked for you to make that a success.
Yeah, I think there was the thought process then, and then there's the what I would do differently on a go forward basis. Mm-hmm. You know, so much of it to get there was just trial and error and grit, you know, and having the stamina to kind of do what's required to do that, because it's a lot of, I don't want to say running around, because that's got a negative connotation, but you got to get out there and you got to make it happen. Right. And that's going back to our Wall Street discussion. That's a totally different sort of approach. I don't want to say approach to business, but that's, you know, you got to get out there and knock on doors, and try to make it happen, and be prepared to have the door slammed in your face all along the way. I think as it relates to what you just said, there's no better driver to get the creative juices going and to drive energy and focus than surrounding yourself with other entrepreneurs that are above you in the game, and in so doing, elevate your state, if you will, mm-hmm. where it's like anything is possible. You know, I find that still with Dow Labs, where I do so much better when I'm out on the road interacting with people, be it investors, be it customers, be it collaborators, whatnot. Like, that's where the creative juice goes, and that's what kind of keeps you going. Right.
Yeah.
Because when you're in the trenches and you're grinding it out, it is a grind and a slugfest, you know. And it's interesting, because with the startup now that I'm with, Dow Labs, relative to where we were with the frozen food platform, Dominic's, like, then we had an infrastructure. You know, we grew it, so we had an infrastructure. And I was reminded, you know, within the first 2 months of going live with Dow, that it's like if something had to get done, chances are I was going to be the guy to have to do it. You know, mm-hmm. and that could be writing copy. It could be project managing, very, very small, you know, stuff that's like, quote unquote, beneath me, but like you got to do. And that is a grind. But it's the bigger vision that being with other entrepreneurs can elevate you to do when you're interacting with them. And to answer your question, I think all that being said is you got to be prepared to run a long sprint, marathon, however you want to call it, but having those pit stops with other entrepreneurs along the way can go, that's what keeps you pushing.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. Could you tell us about like a benchmark moment in your life when you were around entrepreneurs like that and it completely shifted your mentality, your thought process?
I can think of two, and I'll share one with you, is we spent a lot of time when we were building Dow on the coasts, okay? So we were in San Francisco a lot, and then we were in New York City because that's where we built the brand. And I spent a lot of time with one of our advisors and investors who was with a company that I'm not going to name, but it's a very popular online company. And I think being in those environments, in one in particular where I walked in and they took they disrupted a really large category that that everybody kind of uses if you're a guy, and they took it from zero to now very large. And I think being in that environment, and you saw a lot of young people that were all charging and looked like they were very passionate about their functions and the brand and the company and the product. I've tried as hard as I can to emulate that with our office here and our team in Minneapolis. You know, and I'm being purposely vague for a reason, but ultimately it's just like sinking your claws and seeing it and spending a couple of days then in that example with in this environment is, you know, it's very transferable, but you got to be able to see it and feel it, smell it and taste it to be able to transfer it.
Oh, that makes sense. Now, I know that you mentioned that you're something that's important for you is having good mental clarity, and you've love productivity, and you've worked with a productivity results coach for quite a while now. I'd like to ask you, you know, how long have you worked with a coach for?
4 years.
Okay. What do you think is the greatest impact on your life and your business from that experience?
Getting clarity around your goals and getting focused on taking the steps to achieve your goals.
All right. Straight into the point.
Because that's, particularly in the world of entrepreneurialism, you can get sideways really fast.
Yeah.
You know,
true.
And as long as you know what your true north is or your true norths are, and you stick to those, which isn't to say like you tune everything else out, but as long as you're focused around those and get, you know, ultimate clarity, that doesn't mean you're going to be successful, but it keeps the riffraff, it keeps the distractions, it keeps the ability to like, oh, let's try that. You know, it keeps that sort of at bay. Or if you do try that, it's you've got some goals or milestones to be able to validate whether it works or not. So I think just the focus in your goal, it all starts there.
What are some of the most important habits that you have to stay productive on a daily basis?
Absolutely. Number one, I've already started, this is a Friday morning, as we said, I've already started working on my, I don't want to call it my list of things to do for next week, but that's what it is. And I go through a process to do that. So there's a capture process, and then there's the need to kind of chunk things together and time block and all those things. So I do that religiously every week. And that starts, like I said, it's already started. I was working on it right before I talked with you. That'd be number one. Number two is I'm up at least 4 of the 5 days a week at 5:30 in the morning. I can't run anymore. So I'm a big walker. And that's my sort of meditation, if you will. That's my daily priming. That's my sort of way of, one, getting out there and getting a kickstart in the world. But two, if I'm in a bad state or I didn't sleep well or I've got a funk or something like that, any problem in the world can be solved. If you can get mental clarity to solve any problem in the world as long as you have a clear head. And for me, getting out and walking is the best medicine that there is. And the mornings that I don't are the days that I have not, I'm typically not as productive. So this morning I walked 4.5 miles. Okay. Mm-hmm. And I can't run. Like I said, I don't have the knees for it anymore, but I do, you know, do that exercise, and it's meditative. It helps me align and focus on goals and whatnot. So I do that very, very religiously. And then the third thing that I do, is sometime tonight around 5-6 o'clock, I will turn my email accounts off, and I will shut them off. And okay, truthfully, they will go on periodically throughout the weekend, but there are times that they won't, you know. Mm-hmm. And I've gotten much better now. Kind of tangential to that is taking appropriate vacations and giving myself the permission to not work. Mm-hmm. You know, and that's comes with perhaps age and experience, but I had the time when I was like, well, even though I'm on the road, I'll work. You know, and ultimately that just leads to burnout.
Yeah.
And consequently, you know, turning the phone off and taking vacations where the phone is present, but it is not the focal point, that just ultimately leads to more energy and more desire to like, let's get back to work. you know, Monday morning or whenever it is that the plane touches down. So those are a few of the things that I know enough about myself at this juncture that I must do to kind of keep productive and to keep focused and to keep my head about me.
John, can you walk us through your weekly planning productivity process?
Absolutely. It starts with a capture process where I just write everything down. It could be, you know, buy a birthday gift for my wife, or it could be, in this case, we know what our sort of 90-day plan is, and I know the sort of the action steps around those. And so I'm like, oh, I've got to find this resource. So I'll just capture that all down, you know. And ultimately, that list can be anywhere from 15 to 20 things to more, but it's all right there. The next step, and this is the tough, and I don't want to say the tougher, is you got to organize it somehow. And so what I'll try to do is build clusters of things that are tied to the same outcome. So, or the same category, if you will. So I always have a fitness goal embedded in there as well. And so I will capture what those are and I will, you know, ultimately put them together. They'll go in sort of my personal bucket. So if it's, you know, schedule an eye exam, or, and I know I got to do this, so I will capture it after this, is I got to get my car fixed. I'll get all of those kind of together. From there, what I will do is try to write a purpose around those. Because that's where the mental juice comes to get them done, particularly for things that aren't sexy. Mm-hmm. You know, in the case of finding a new resource, like that's a lot of work. You got to, you know, build a scope of work or an RFP. You got to then like post it. You got to start looking at resumes, all that type of stuff, you know. But if you know the outcome for that, and in this case, we need some digital marketing help for a very specific product, well, you know what your sort of, you know, ultimate outcome is with that. And so the rationale for that helps you like get it done. And then ultimately I'll do sort of, if it is something big like that, I'll draw up a massive action plan, you know, which is sort of the guts of taking the capture of, well, okay, we need a new resource. Okay, how am I going to get it? Number one, you're going to write a job description. Number two, you're going to find out where to post it. Number three, you're going to post it. Number four, you're going to check it, you know, so things of that nature. And from there, and hopefully this is making sense, you're getting things more time chunked together and put them in categories, and then you can just bang them out. So big things aren't as complicated if you just kind of like say, all right, this is what our goal is. Here's the rationale for the goal, and ultimately here are the steps that we have to do to achieve it. And we've kind of categorized them. You can get more done faster and more organized and achieve your outcome more efficiently by doing it that way than, well, dabble in this, and then I'll try this. Now let me jump to this because it's also on my list of things to do. So it's making your list of things to do work for you in an efficient manner.
Did you create that?
I did not create that.
Where'd you get that from?
That is, am I allowed to say this? That's the Tony Robbins RPM model.
Okay, yeah, I use something very similar. So I was kind of curious. I do a weekly planning process from him that I've done for like the past 10 years, or 5 years, excuse me. And so I was like, I wonder if John came up with that on his own.
I wish, but like, you know, he's got some great quotes and success leaves clues. And like one clue to success is like, you just got to get things done, but you got to do it methodically, you know? And that's the way to do
it. Who are some of the entrepreneurs that you look up to?
So one that I look up to very much is Phil Knight. And if you haven't read the book Shoe Dog, which is the story of how he and a group of kind of wacky dudes kind of came together to build what is now a member of the Dow Industrial Average, it is a great read. And I look up to him very, very much for a variety of reasons, not the least of which is his success, but it was the, you know, kind of going back to the why of his success. And it was the passion, it was his unwavering belief, it was his stamina, it was all the above. And this particular book is great because it tells the story. It's not my 10 rules for success or how did I do it, but it's here's how I started it and here's what happened along the way. And it's a beautiful read. And I just have such, I have such high regard for him now having read that book. So that would certainly be one. Number two, and this is very cliche, but it's a great cliche is of course, Richard Branson. Mm-hmm. And some of that stems from, you know, I do have a passion for aviation, which is why I almost died in Osceola, Iowa, but it's also the fact that he did it his way, you know, and both of these guys are very transparent in both their successes, obviously, but as much their failures, and what didn't work. And just being very human about it. I mean, you read Shoe Dog and you hear the story of Nike and the number of times that they almost lost the company, you know, either for a disruption with a supplier in the early days or their financial resources and banking lines were cut off at multiple times. It makes, when you read some of these stories, it makes the experiences that you go through, in my case, running an eggplant company where, man, oh, man, we were cash tight all the time. And working capital was always an issue because we set up an offshore production facility and we had to buy a lot at one time because we didn't ship pallets, we shipped containers, you know, and that really screws with your cash. Well, the same applied when they were building Nike. And so to hear those things, it just kind of normalizes that it's, you know, we're all stuck in the mud at some point in time, you know. So those right now are the two entrepreneurs that I really am looking up to.
I want to talk a bit about your venture that you set up in the Dominican Republic. And it's an operation that's helping people backpack around the world, correct?
Well, it's allowed me to backpack around the world.
Okay. Well, tell us more about it.
Absolutely. We, as I mentioned, had this factory that was going to kill the company. Uh-huh. And it was in the one I talked about earlier in St. Augustine, Florida. And ultimately, if we were going to survive, we had to get out of that thing. And ultimately, we did. And we shut it down. And we were starting to work with manufacturers here in the United States. But ultimately, doing research, we were able to locate a farmer in the Dominican Republic who was growing a tremendous amount of vegetables. Mm-hmm. And he had some experience on the manufacturing side, and we kind of knew that in our fact-checking about him. And ultimately, what happened was, and it started very simplistically with an email. Is this something, maybe a phone call or an email, but it was, this is who we are. This is what we're trying to do. Is this something that you'd be open to? And I guess in hindsight, he was as much an entrepreneur then as I am now. And it was, yeah, let's talk about it. And eventually what transpired was we put together an arrangement whereby he would not only continue to grow stuff for us, but we were able to locate both the location and then the money down there that we were able to set up sort of a very small manufacturing facility. This is actually quite large now, where everything would be vertically aligned or integrated. So he would grow it. We would send ingredients down there. He would process it. And then eventually what we did ultimately is we figured out a way to get it back to the United States on both coasts. And as a consequence, I was able to totally turn my attention to sales, marketing, and John McGarvey, as opposed to, God, like this, it went down again, you know. And that allowed us to ultimately, you know, have a tremendous amount of flexibility and success.
Well, you have to talk to the guy that Ryan that set up the interview, because he sent me a message that it says the Dominican Republic venture helps people backpack around the world.
Got me on the show, apparently. So I'm not right.
Yeah. We'll talk about this, Ryan. What's going on here? Well, cool. Let's dive into the newest venture, Dow Labs. Like, so I grew up around an uncle who was very much into Tai Chi and Chinese medicine, and his friends were too. So I got exposed to it in Missouri, of all places, which, you know, in the Midwest, not a lot of people back then would dabble into Chinese medicine or meditation or more especially Eastern mentality sort of thing. But I know it's very beneficial, and I know nowadays, which is great, there's such people are much more open to blend Eastern and Western thought mentalities and medicine and everything, and it's really, you know, helping us all with our health. You know, and you're passionate about it because you started, it helped you with your life in Tibet and then working with the frozen food company. So why, tell us about Dow Labs, like where you got the idea to start it and more about the venture it's become today.
Sure. So the roots of Dow Labs, and that's kind of a bad pun, started when I was in high school, when I first ventured to China with a Chinese language trip there in 1993-ish or so. And I kind of just fell in love with that part of the world. But you fast forward to obviously my time there, and then ultimately working in the natural product industry and seeing the opportunity. You know, and that would take a longer discussion, but ultimately I was like, there's something there that we could do. And so it was a combination of all those plus, and this is important, and I think it's relevant to the show in general, is like, I love that part of the world. And I wanted, damn it, the ability to go back there for both personal and professional reasons. And I love to travel. And I thought, well, I could guess go work for a big food company now and hope that I could work my way into that opportunity, or I could just kind of do it myself. And a combination of all those sort of factors led to the creation of Dow Labs, which we started 2 years ago. It's some partners and myself, one of whom is a gentleman by the name of Dr. Eric Karchmer, who is a very gifted, skilled, smart doctor of Chinese medicine who lives in Boone, North Carolina. And he's the sort of the brains behind the products, if you will, as far as what the herbs do and the positioning around them and whatnot. But ultimately, the premise was to make Chinese medicine, which is a practice that is as beautiful as it is powerful and that has been around for nearly 2,500 years, make it less esoteric than what it is currently. There are 40,000 acupuncturists across the United States, and so Chinese medicine is here. It just happens to be very, very fractured, and it's just not well understood, even though you get into cocktail party conversations, and the number of people that I've talked to that are like, oh, I see an acupuncturist, or, yeah, she prescribes me these herbs. They taste terrible, but, like, they work and whatnot. And so it is here, and all we are trying to do with our vision is make it much more approachable and the forefront of a health option as other alternatives that are currently out there. And so what we've done is we've taken very classic formulas that are tried and true from the standpoint of heritage and history that are widely consumed in China, you know, still to this day, very much so in this day, but try to put sort of a Western and a modern spin on it. When we think about Chinese medicine and herbs in particular, they taste terrible. I mean, they taste really, really, really bad, but they're really, really, really powerful and effective. Okay, and so we're like, well, if we could solve that problem, then, okay, that'd be half the battle. But then number two is they're very confusing. The practice of Chinese medicine deals with meridians and qi and yang and deficiency and how does your tongue look? And let me feel your pulse, not from the beats per minute, but the energy of the pulse. And so it's like, wow, this is tough to get your arms around. So we thought, well, if we could do some things to make it more approachable, then that would be half the battle. And then number three is, I think from the standpoint of doing it sort of appropriately as a herbal supplement, we manufacture things here in the United States. You know, all the herbs start in Asia, but we manufacture them, you know, here, and we test and test and test and verify and whatnot. And so the idea is to take, like I said, and I'll wrap it up, is this beautiful, powerful practice and make it very approachable and effective for Westerners.
I'm curious, what's your favorite? I know you said Easy Wanderer was your favorite, but are there any that are your favorite besides the Easy Wanderer that you use on a regular basis?
They're all wonderful formulas. Two of them are specifically for women, so they wouldn't be a fit for me. But to answer your question, and I'm looking at one right now, we just launched these sleep formulas last month, and they are absolutely incredible. Mm-hmm. I have a very overactive mind. I am prone to wake up at 2 a.m. and can stress out about things or beat myself up or, you know, God forbid, start working on my list of things to do. and this formula in particular, which we call mental tranquility, does exactly that. It quiets the mind and helps you get a peaceful, uninterrupted, sustained night's sleep. And I actually started taking the formula and the herbs behind the product 2 years ago when we were raising money and trying to build a company, and it was very stressful. And I still have a lot on my plate at any given time, and I still have the ability to get stressed pretty easily. This formula neutralizes all that. It helps me sleep. It provides mental acuity and clarity and focus, the likes of which I don't think there's any other product out there. And I'm incredibly passionate about it. So that's the one, mental tranquility, that I would also invite people to look at.
Excellent.
Good thing, that Bill.
Yeah, I want to get one more question out of you, John. For you, the difference between six-figure and seven-figure mentalities as an entrepreneur?
I think we all want the seven-figure because that's what kind of drives, perhaps, that signifies that we've perhaps created something slightly bigger. But I think the path to get there, as long as you're passionate about the why of what you're doing, it doesn't matter. You know, you got to be a six-figure entrepreneur to become a seven-figure, right? And that might be a very short time period, or it might be much longer. But ultimately, I don't think there's any difference between the two if you're passionate about what you're doing and the why of what you're doing it.
Good point. What are some hacks to figure out a why if somebody's lost or confused about that?
I don't think there's any hacks. I thought there were, but I will debate this with anybody. I think ultimately, going back to having the focus and having the true north that we spoke of, and a degree of self-awareness and humility around both and all those things, that's all you need. That's the combination.
Excellent. John, I think we're going to wrap up there. First off, I want to say thank you so much for coming on the show. I really enjoyed our conversation and sharing all your tips and tricks and all your wisdom with us. We really appreciate it. So thank you very much. If the listeners want to reach out and learn more about what you have going on, where's the best place they could do that at?
Absolutely. Check us out on mydaolabs.com. That's mydaolabs.com. My email is all over that website because we have a premise of being very transparent, so you can contact me there. Or we're very active on Instagram, so you can find us at Dow Labs. So that's the best way, and we love to talk with people. So by all means, reach out.
Excellent. And again, thank you so much. It was a pleasure, John. We're going to wrap up there. Listeners, thank you guys for joining us once again, and we'll see you guys on the next episode. Goodbye, everybody. Hey, listeners, thanks for joining us once again. We wanted to remind you about our high-performance productivity coaching and our annual Get Shit Done live retreat in Thailand. Both are designed for entrepreneurs by entrepreneurs to get a lot of work done rapidly, and whether you need some personal coaching while working away at home or a retreat in Thailand where you can get out of your normal routine and surround yourself with other successful entrepreneurs, we have those options for you. Check out all the details at thebusinessmethod.com, and we'll see you on the next podcast.